south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. Well, it didn't take long. Actually, it did take pretty long for lag time to kick in, and now I see in the big Latin American newspapers, some astute Spanish-speaking marketing guys have put together a course called Bitcoin and Cryptocurrencies, How to Make a Million, and How to Be a Miner in Your Own Home. However, it's unknown if they're talking about $1 million, $1 million pesos, $1 million lempiras, $1 million colones, because, you know, in every Latin country, everyone wants to be a millionaire in their own funny money. For example, to be a millionaire in Mexico is a huge thing, but it's only a little more than $50,000 in U.S. funny money. Yep, it's all about relativity expectations and cost of living. The fact is, I remember my own dad in the late 1960s would say, a guy's really made it in life if he's making his age. And I bet he was maybe 40 at the time. However, making 40 grand a year in the late 60s was like making 200 grand a year now. Just another example how the U.S. government and the Fed are slowly destroying the monetary system. But we were talking about the sudden appearance of a cryptocurrency seminar tour in Spanish. Well, the lag time there was only, what, 3 or 4 years? So just as I've mentioned on many previous shows, you don't have to have a new idea, an amazing light going off in your head, or a brainstorm. All you have to do is recycle what's popular up in the States, translate it into Spanish, dumb it down a bit, and most importantly, give out a nice diploma suitable for framing and charge 50 or 100 bucks a head. And if it's been popular with the gringo culture, that's a prerequisite for success, of course. Pretty much all the heavy lifting in the marketing department's been done for you already. Since all Latin cable TV networks are carrying first world cable stations, translated of course, and ABC, NBC, CBS network TV stations too. Oh yeah, and those US network TV stations are, wouldn't you know it, coming out of the most famous wannabe first world havens of all. Those mythical golden cities of Los Angeles and Miami, especially Miami. Never here in Latin America would you ever see a network U.S. TV station coming out of Ohio, Michigan, or New York. Because, you know, down here, no cities in Latin America have the cachet of Los Angeles and Miami. In fact, these days, every single popular Latin American soap opera has Miami as a principal location setting. So if you're down here in Latin America and happen to be standing in front of a boob tube, invariably it'll be tuned to either a sports channel, a Christian channel, or a telenovela, a soap opera. And if it's a soap opera, don't be surprised if you see scenes filmed or ostensibly filmed in South Beach, Miami. Yep, that's what it's come to. Oh, you'll see the famous beach and skyline, and all those beautiful, wealthy people who never worked a day in their lives living the high life. All of them, by the way, Latinos. Cementing the illusion that once you make it to Miami, you'll be well on your way to having your own beach house, pool, boat dock, along with your own maids and staff of illegal Latinos looking to move on up. Hey, you gotta start somewhere, right? Now, if you think I'm being classist, racist, or stereotypical here, or that I'm full of mierda del toro, that would be bull poop in English, I invite you to tune in to one of those 24/7 Latin telenovela stations. You'll see that I'm not really telling it like it is. I'm actually being quite kind. I'm really downplaying the whole thing. It's absurd and ridiculous beyond anything I've said about it. Anyway, there's a Bitcoin and cryptocurrency conference rolling through all the big Latin American cities now, 50 bucks a head. It's a 4-hour course, and I see in Panama City it's going to be at a Hilton. From what I understand, they generally rent a salon that holds around 200 people, and it's standing room only. Everybody wants to be a crypto millionaire, or at least think they can get in on the action. Hell, even a broke Latin college kid with a business degree working at McDonald's can afford 50 bucks. Oh, and another thing. Being that I'm here in Latin America, I visit a lot of Latin American websites, meaning they're all in Spanish, of course. And just lately, I've been starting to get a lot of pop-up windows like never before. Again, in Spanish, offering all manner of cryptocurrency stuff. Obviously, it's totally confusing to the average Latino. It must be driving them nuts knowing that there's a crypto world out there that they know nothing about. Which is why the people who put this crypto conference thing together are just cleaning up. You know, cryptos and the blockchain are the modern day version of the gold rush. But just like back in the days of the gold rush, the guys that made the real money, the sure thing money, were the guys selling the shovels. And at 50 bucks a head, 200 people in the room, that's 10,000 bucks for 4 hours. And to rent the salon, maybe 300 bucks. Hey, why didn't you think of that? Why didn't I think of that? I know. As I record this segment today, the cryptos have taken a huge hit. And don't think I haven't got a lot of emails from people saying, Johnny, it's crashing, it's burning. To which I say, man, I've been in that world since nearly the beginning, when only the nerds knew anything about it. And in the past 5 years, I've watched it crash and burn at least 20 times, dropping at least to half of its value, sit there a while, and then pop up again, bigger and stronger than ever. You know, with cryptos, it's always been two steps forward, one step backward, stir and repeat. However, I know these days it's quite worrisome because there's big money involved. I mean, let's face it. If you had 10 bitcoins 4 years ago and you bought them at $100, boy, you spent a grand, right? And then a couple of months later, it went up to 400 bucks. You made 400% on your money and now it's worth 4,000 bucks on an original $1,000 investment. Well, you smile. You have to feel good about that, right? Now, back then, even on a huge gain like that, most people didn't sell. They had really no place to spend their bitcoins. Then, as what often happens with cryptos, a couple months later, it dropped back down to 200 bucks a coin. You just lost 50% of that 4,000 bucks, and you're thinking, oh, crap. But still, you're ahead. At that point, it's a game. It's kind of fun. You ride the ups and downs. It puts a little edge, a little excitement into your life. You start to understand how a gambler feels. But now, these days, you're talking about real money. Those same 10 bitcoins, just a month or so ago, were worth close to $200,000 for a short time there. And then suddenly, like right now, it drops in half. You find you've lost $100,000 or more in just a few weeks. So why am I bringing this up? Because I'm getting a lot of emails and people are asking my take on all this. Well, you just got my take. I've watched the rise and fall of cryptos for years now, and I've heard all the heavy-hitting guys on Wall Street and the pundits, the ones that, by the way, hate it because they didn't get in early, or because they see the writing on the wall that it just might kill their own business. Yep, over the past 4 or 5 years, those same guys at least 20 times have claimed that Bitcoin and cryptos were dead. Now, I'm no financial advisor, but I say this is a good buying opportunity right now. You know, the old saying, and I think it was the Rothschilds who said this, you buy when there's blood in the streets, and you sell when your taxi driver tells you about this great new thing he's invested in. They call it contrarian investing. Just like for the last year or so, all contrarian investors would think it was absolutely nuts to be invested in the stock market. We're talking about extreme bubble territory there, too. Again, I'm no financial advisor or financial guru, but people do ask my opinion all the time, and I'll give it to you. Last time I was in the stock market, probably 30 years ago now, I got burned for 10 grand or so. That's when I promised myself I'd never get back in again. Then I tried options trading, took a short course, got burned for over 10 grand there too. That's when I realized you can't do that stuff part-time. 10 minutes a day won't cut it. The big boys will trounce you every time, especially now since computers are doing all the big trades. And unfortunately, the brokers usually make their dough churning accounts of people like me. And what's different about this blockchain, Bitcoin, and crypto thing is that I actually was informed about it very early on from people who could read the code and pick it apart. Guys who spent hundreds of hours dissecting the blockchain and reading all those famous white papers that I never read. So what I'm saying is now is a very scary time for people who just got into cryptocurrencies because a lot of them lost their asses in the last couple of weeks. Well, you know what? I guess I have a much thicker skin than most because I've been through these ups and downs at least 20 times now. I watched how people who just buy and hold make the biggest gains, and the people that keep switching back and forth in and out of different cryptos and ICOs wish they just would have stuck with what they started with. Yep, they'll jump back and forth often after reading a couple blogs about how one is going to zoom past the others. Yep, people have discovered crypto arbitrage. They sell some Bitcoin to buy Litecoin, Litecoin to Ethereum, Ethereum to Ripple to Tether, Tether to Bitcoin Cash. And you know, to do that, you pay a premium every time you go in and out. The fact is, I know quite a few people who wish they never would have got started on juggling between coins. chasing down the flavor of the month or week. And you know how you feel about cryptos right now has a lot to do with when you first got in. I mean, look, just 6 or 7 months ago when Bitcoin was at around 2,000, if you got in then and held, you should be deliriously happy, even if Bitcoin's sitting at 7 or 8,000. Because if you had your dough in treasuries or the stock market, it'd take you 25 years or more to get those kind of returns. Then again, if you got into Bitcoin recently, let's say at 15,000 or 16,000, you got yourself a nice haircut, and I'm sure you're scratching where that hair used to be, thinking, what the hell did I do? So the golden rule here is never invest more than you can afford to lose, and always have a little gold too, and not in some kind of storage vault. You have to have it with you, or in a place you can get at it quickly and easily. And man, do I know some places you could hide your gold in plain sight. Ask me that in person or on a phone consult. I'm not going to tell it on the radio. What? And ruin a terrific secret? By the way, if you have some gold, and I recommend gold 1 ounce Canadian or U.S. coins, smaller denominations too, you know, you don't want silver, gold, platinum, palladium ingots stamped with a serial number and weight on it, no matter how nicely it's done. Because even if you have great paperwork along with that, when it comes time to utilize it, trade it in, barter with it, whatever, you'll never get the full value out of it. However, if you've got gold coins that are U.S. or Canadian, that's something that everyone with a half a brain can recognize. And then just check the internet to see what the exchange rate is and go from there. However, there just might not be an internet when you really have to cash those things in. Yes, I know it's not something people want to think about, but the grid just might go down. For one thing, there's coronal mass ejections. They could wipe out the grid in a second. When you get a big one like that and they come through periodically, remember the Carrington event? Well, for the disinterested and uninformed, you should know about this. It was the most powerful solar flare on record. In 1859, it was so strong, it fried electrical telegraph wires all through the U.S., actually setting telegraph poles, because there were no telephones yet, on fire. Now, electrical engineers and physicists today have extrapolated the power of that thing and say if it happened today, and they think something like that comes every 100 years or so, which means we're overdue, right? It would completely fry the U.S. and Canadian grid, which, of course, would bring down the internet for an indeterminate period of time. Or would it? Well, here's the good news. I've seen this YouTube, and I have a link to it, put together by some very scientific guys. They built a little chamber where they can jolt anything inside with the strength of the Carrington effect. In the YouTube, first they put in a laptop computer. It completely gets fried. Next, they take a solar charge controller. That's, you know, something that you use when you're setting up a solar off-the-grid system. Changes the DC voltage from the solar panels to AC, electric current you can use in your house. And when they jolted that, they completely fried it. Then they put a common solar panel in there. They fried that too, but found if they disconnected the wire or cable at the junction of the solar panel, there would be no damage at all. However, with the long power wires connected, it fried every time. Same thing with the solar charge controller. If they disconnected the wires that went to the panels and to the AC circuits to the house, it also survived. It didn't fry. So yes, when the next big EMP event comes, whether it's a solar ejection or Kim Jong Dickhead Soon launching a EMP nuke, if done right, it could blow out many station transformers and bring down the grid. However, in regards to people off the grid on solar power, if they were to get some advance warning, then all they have to do is disconnect the wires, cables, and power supplies from that sensitive equipment. So remember that one important point. Anything you've got around the house that's got a cord attached to it during a solar mass ejection event, no matter how it comes or in what form, will fry the piece of equipment it's attached to because that cord acts as an antenna. In other words, if at your workstation, your desk, you happen to have an external hard drive backup, you know it's connected to your computer through a little USB cable, right? Which means if an EMP comes through, it's going to blow out your device and your computer too, because that cable will act as an antenna, as will your power cable to your laptop. So the trick is to get a little advanced warning. And guess what? If NASA and the U.S. Geological Survey guys and NOAA are doing their jobs, they'll get a couple hours, even up to a couple of days notice. You see, contrary to popular belief and Science 101 textbooks, coronal mass ejections do not travel at the speed of light. Now, when the sun produces regular old light, it takes about 8 minutes to get to the Earth. That's 93 million miles at 186,000 miles per second. However, the bulk of a solar mass ejection, or coronal mass ejection, will travel a lot slower than that, anywhere from 1 million to 4 million miles an hour. Sounds like they travel hyper fast, right? But remember, the sun is 93 million miles away. That means a solar flare or solar mass ejection could take 1 to 4 days to get from the sun to the Earth. And NASA and some of the other space agencies have satellites and sensors to give us all at least a couple hours warning. Now, whether those government agencies are together enough to announce such a thing to the public, I mean, we all know whatever the government does, they do it badly. Then again, if you're thinking about devious conspiracy theories, you might be thinking the government's hardened their own facilities against EMPs and have got their own solar power backup systems and such. Maybe they'll just let the rest of the grid go down, and that's the plan, because then they can institute martial law, which in effect cancels the Constitution, takes away all your rights, and of course, first thing they'll do is storm the neighborhoods and collect the guns. You think that can't happen? Well, I'll tell you one place it'll never happen, here in Latin America, which is where all the smart or lucky gringos are going to be, watching the first world collapse from a nice, safe distance. Anyway, the obvious thing to do if you get such a warning is to immediately go around the house and unplug things, but not at the electrical wall outlet. That won't do any good. Unplug them right at the device itself. And not just your computer's power cord. I'm talking about USB, Ethernet, iPod, and audio cables too. Pull them out of the unit you're trying to protect. By the way, if you're interested in seeing that obscure YouTube video I just mentioned, the one where they inject EMPs into laptops, solar panels, etc., shoot me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com, and I'll send you the link. It'll scare you, all right. So then why am I mentioning this at all? Well, we were talking about gold, silver, bullion, and such, and what coins and sizes are best to have when the poop hits the ventilator and you have to start buying and bartering. Hopefully it won't come to that, but there are so many critical tipping points ready to topple, who knows? So with the internet out, we're all screwed, right? Well, what makes you think, even in a grid-down situation, that the internet's going to be out? There are tons of redundancies built into that system, you know. Think of this. There are thousands of solar farms out there and people off the grid. They've all got servers, and logically, they're off the grid, too. So it's true. You can bet a big solar flare that knocks out the grid's going to put a big dent in the internet, but there'll be a lot of servers working. And if you're off the grid yourself, or even partially off the grid, and you've had a little advanced warning and pulled your cables, as mentioned, you could be back in business post-haste. Though probably at dial-up modem speeds at first. God, you remember those things? Oh, and did I mention just recently, got a shipment of my own off-the-grid solar panels and parts, which I'll be assembling in the next month or two. So you'll get the lowdown and the full report as I piece this thing together. Yep, I'm going off the grid at my main residence here in the coffee fields. Although I'm not telling the power company. I'm still going to keep their power feed as a standby, because the cool thing about off-the-grid solar these days is that you don't have to disconnect yourself from the main power grid. Your controller panel is smart, so it knows that during the day, your panels are putting out power, so it uses that power first. And at night, it knows your lithium-ion batteries are charged, so it starts drawing from that battery pack. Then the next day, when the sun comes up, it starts drawing from the panels again. And if you size your system correctly, that's how it'll go indefinitely. But let's say it's the rainy season, it's been raining for 6 days straight, no sun at all. You know, that can happen, but only in very severe situations, like, for example, when you're in the path of a hurricane. Because, you see, even if it's overcast and raining, normally, again, barring hurricanes, your solar panels will be picking some energy up from the sun. Anyway, worst-case scenario, suppose your panels are putting out nothing and your batteries, after 3 or 4 days, are about depleted. Then your solar charge controller will start drawing power the old-fashioned way from the power grid. Which is why I suggest if you're going off the grid yourself, don't give the power company the finger right in their faces. Though in effect, that's what you're doing, because you're cutting them off. You're better off leaving the incoming lines as they are, just to utilize them for a worst-case scenario. Now, that means you'll have to pay the minimum meter charge, which down here in Latin America could be $1.50 a month. But we'll get into all that in an upcoming show. Also remember, unlike up in the States, when people want to go off the grid, they often spend a lot of extra money because they want to beef up and overbuild their system. Why? Because the further up north you go, the farther the sun is away from the perpendicular to your detriment. So you've got fewer sun hour days. Not to mention you got to deal with government and a ton of inspections, too. Oh, and up north, you'll have to beef up your system for heating and air conditioning. It's pretty much a guarantee you're going to pay 2 to 3 times more to go off the grid up where you are than you would down here in Latin America. So it's important to know you can get off the grid here in Latin America with a rather small system. It can easily be done for under 10 grand. In fact, if you knew what you were doing and were halfway decent at wiring, you probably could install a complete off-the-grid system for 6 or 7 grand. Yep, including the latest lithium-ion batteries. Now remember, here in the Altiplano region of Latin America where you need no air conditioning or heating, the average gringo family uses around 400 to 500 kilowatt hours a month. And the average Latin family, I just looked it up and I've seen a few bills too. They almost never use more than 150 kilowatt hours a month. However, upper middle class and wealthy Latins are gringo wannabes, so they use just as much as a regular gringo family, which is around 900 to 1,000 kilowatt hours a month. That means up by you in Milwaukee, Seattle, and Cleveland, to get completely off the grid, you'll need twice the system that you'd need if you had a house here in Latin America. Unless, of course, you live in the lower elevations or by the beach, then you're going to have to be running your air conditioning at least in one room all the time. Just remember, one of the first things you'll notice about living here in Latin America is that decent houses, the ones you'll want to live in, are mostly made of concrete, mortar, and block. And sooner or later, you're bound to figure out that houses aren't insulated. Not at all. Nor is there any widespread use of double or triple pane windows either. In fact, I'll never forget the time I was talking to the architect of a small project at the beach. He was building a group of around 20 very nice freestanding cabañas around a pool. And I said, you know, they'll need air conditioning, right? He said, yep, of course, we'll be selling and renting them to gringos. They demand that kind of stuff, you know. For the locals, he said, ceiling fans are good enough, but the gringos, they want AC. So we took a walk in one of the units. It was pretty much done, but unpainted yet. And there was a guy installing an air conditioner. Anyway, I inadvertently said to the architect, what's the R value of your insulation? He looked at me for a second and said, R value? I said, yeah, you know, for the insulation in your block. Well, he gave me that look. I know that look well. It means you're a crazy gringo. Then he said, we could put insulation in if the owner requests it. And I said, oh, really? You mean it's not a routine thing to do? He said, no, only if the owner or developer requests it. Then I said, how many units like this have you built? He said, oh, I've built hundreds. And how many owners have asked for insulation? He said, well, not many. I'd say none. Now remember, he's not talking about gringo owners. He's talking about the developer, who in Latin America will almost always be Latinos. So here's the problem, and gringos have to watch out for this. You'll see a very nice beach development. New, concrete, well-made. Beautiful Spanish tile roof. Air conditioning, of course. Oh, and one more thing. Remember, here in Latin America, they don't have central air conditioning. They don't run ducts like you see in first world buildings, except in some high-rise towers. So you'll see a lot of single-room air conditioners. So anyway, when you see a nice beach house, well-constructed, and you're thinking about buying it, unless it was built or supervised by a gringo, which is rare, there'll be single-pane windows and no insulation. That means if you want to be comfortable and run the air conditioning, you're going to have a high electric bill. That means if you're going off the grid solar, you'll have to supersize it. Or try to retrofit insulation and double or triple glazed windows in an existing block structure. To which I say, good luck with that. Because remember, you may be able to, with some effort, insulate the walls. You know, they've got 2- and 4-inch styrofoam panels. You could always stud out the interior walls and use that for insulation. It's really effective stuff. But what about the ceiling and the floor? And the windowsills? They're not insulated either. Bottom line, it's a big project and probably not worth it. But I digress. Man, did I digress this time. I started out talking about bogus crypto seminars in Spanish, then gold coins and solar mass ejections, the internet going off the grid, and then insulation. Never a dull moment or a straight line of thought here on the Expat Files, huh? All right, now I should mention that by popular demand, once again I'm offering my Expat Essentials course. So what's it all about? Well, many people who have taken the course have contacted me and said it really is the best blueprint they've ever seen for organizing their Plan B and getting it off the ground. Check out my free introductory video at theexpatfiles.com/academy. Meanwhile, in my email box, I found this article from a loyal listener. He says, Johnny, if this doesn't confirm what regular Americans are thinking about illegal immigrants and how the men especially bring their low-class bad habits with them, listen to this. The title of the piece is, Illegal Immigrant Urinating in Public Slashes Man Who Objects. All right, now paraphrase this. It begins, an illegal immigrant caught urinating in public in Maryland used a box cutter to viciously attack a man who suggested that he use a bathroom instead. By the way, this is from February 6, 2018, a couple days ago. It goes on to say, the victim was treated for slash wounds to his neck, face, and stomach after the attack, which occurred at a bus terminal in Montgomery County outside Washington, D.C., WJLA-TV has reported. The accused attacker, Salvador Gomez Lopez, 46, of Montgomery County, was allegedly drunk and belligerent at the time, says the report. Now, a spokeswoman for Immigration and Customs Enforcement says that Gomez Lopez was in the U.S. illegally from El Salvador and also was a fugitive from other charges. Then it says a pair of witnesses to the event explained that trouble began when Gomez Lopez started to relieve himself in plain view of other bus riders in the terminal. As he was doing so, the victim suggested that Gomez Lopez should pull up his pants and use a bathroom. That's when Gomez Lopez pulled out a box cutter blade and started his attack. According to the police report, Gomez Lopez was uncooperative and gave arresting officers a phony name when he was questioned. So you might ask, why am I bringing this up? The show is called The Expat Files Living in Latin America, right? Whereas the guy we're talking about is a Latino living up in Maryland. But I wanted to point out two things. One is that for Latino men, especially lower and middle class Latino men, the world is their urinal. And two, because it's middle class, lower, and poorer classes of Latinos that slip into the U.S. illegally, they can't help but bring their bad habits with them. Of course, to them, they're not bad habits. That's just a way of macho guy life in Latin America. Now, the thing is, just whipping it out and doing it anywhere really does rankle expats and gringos, especially the ladies. Even with me, 28 years down here now, when I see a guy whipping it out, and I see it almost every time I'm driving, I'll nearly always slow up, roll down the window, lay on the horn, and say, ¡Qué vergüenza tan pequeño! Translation, how embarrassing, it's so small. Which just might be the only way to get a thick-headed, low-class macho guy to question what he's doing. Or maybe not. You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, you can schedule a one-on-one phone call with me. But first, download my free Plan B questionnaire at www.thenewexpat.com. Better yet, if you want to get your Plan B going from right up there in the States, just sign up for my 9-hour Expat Essentials course. Get the perfect Plan B blueprint by going to theexpatfiles.com/academy. Nos vemos.